You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
There is so much to talk about, so much can happen. In a week, Matt Gaetz, one of the House Republicans who voted to set aside the results of the 2020 election, the member from Florida's 1st Congressional District. He's as much of an insurrectionist as the people who broke down the doors of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th and smeared shit on the walls and beat a cop to death. The New York Times reported last week that the almost 40-year-old Gaetz is under investigation, an investigation that started during the Trump administration. Gaetz is under investigation for allegedly fucking a 17-year-old girl and then transporting that girl across state lines to fuck her some more. Other stories have come out since this one broke. There are other girls, it seems, allegedly. And Gaetz may or may not have shown members of Congress on the floor of the House nude photos and explicit videos of other women he's fucked without the consent of the women in those photos and videos, which all by itself is a crime in Washington, D.C. We've been hearing from QAnon lunatics for the last 4 years that there is a secret cabal of powerful elected officials, all of them Democrats, who are fucking children. And the popular definition of children these days is anyone under 25, so this 17-year-old girl definitely counts. And it turns out that there might be a secret cabal of powerful elected officials fucking children, but it's not Hillary Clinton or Tom Hanks or Oprah. It's Matt Gaetz and Roy Moore and George Nader, Google him. And then there's Trump himself. One of the many women who accused Trump of sexually assaulting them was 13 years old at the time she alleges the former president and forever piece of shit assaulted her. Hey, QAnon, the pedophiles are coming from inside the building, your wing of it, the right wing. Stop projecting. Or I could open the show by reminding you all to reset your how many days has it been since the last gender reveal party fatality wall calendar. We made it to 36 days. Without a gender reveal party fatality, which may be a new record, before two men died last week after the plane they were flying over a gender reveal party at a beach in Mexico crashed into the ocean. They let off a little pink smoke from the plane. It's got a vagina, everybody, before taking that tragic nosedive right into the water. This is actually the second time a plane has crashed during a gender reveal party. Also this week, this asshole opened his mouth in front of a microphone. I could talk about this asshole.
Everything God does is sustainable.
Amen.
It's sustainable. It goes on and on and on. It's perpetual. Sorry, when you have homosexual relationships, it's not perpetual. Give them an island, they'll be gone in 40 years. Okay? Because they can't. God created us to be this way. There's so much common sense that needs to be applied to our policies, our procedures, the things that we do in our government.
That's George Langdon, a GOP elected official in New York State, speaking at a Return to Liberty Fundamentalist Christian Conference in New York State last week. Everything God creates lasts forever. Tell that one to the next Triceratops you run into on the subway. As for putting gays on an island and all of us being gone in 40 years, Manhattan, last time I checked, is an island in New York State. And the gays, we've been putting ourselves on that island for way more than 40 years. And unlike the dinos and dodos, we haven't gone extinct. Put us all on an island, any island. I vote for New Zealand, so long as we can keep the prime minister. Put us all on an island. And sooner or later, you're gonna need a bigger island. Because straight people are just going to keep fucking us into existence. That's actually how this works. Straight people make gay people, and gay people make pretty much everything else. But I want to talk about, for a change, is not an asshole, a non-asshole. Tim Keller, Reverend Tim Keller. He's one of the good ones, one of the Nalts, the not-all-like-that Christians. He's an evangelical, but the church he founded in Manhattan, surrounded by gays, is controversial in evangelical circles because Keller's church is, quote, committed to the full inclusion of women and LGBT people. So I don't want to pick on Tim. He's not an asshole. But I do want to take serious issue with this asshole thing he tweeted out over the weekend. Here's Tim's tweet. Sexual love, if it's not expressed in an exclusive lifelong covenant relationship, is dehumanizing. I'm sorry, that's bullshit. Not just bullshit, that's harmful. Harmful bullshit. Not harmful to people like me, not to people who don't believe it or see through it. It's actually harmful to people who do believe it. Because people who believe that, people who believe that sex outside a committed relationship is inherently dehumanizing, those people will accept dehumanizing treatment from someone they're only having casual sex with because they won't feel like they're entitled to better. And people who believe that bullshit can also rationalize treating someone in a dehumanizing way if all they want from them is sex. Sex outside of a committed relationship is not dehumanizing. Even if you're a human who enjoys dehumanization or you're with someone who does, dehumanization is a kink, being put in a full rubber gimp suit with a mask, being turned into human furniture, dehumanization. Being dehumanized by someone because it turns you on or turns them on affirms your humanity as a human who's turned on by dehumanization. And if you pause for a second and think, you'll realize that what Tim is talking about here, what Tim is condemning, is most of the sex people have most of the time over most of their lives. Very, very few people marry the first person they have sex with. Very, very few people are virgins on their wedding nights. Are only virgins human? If you've had sex before marriage, where do you go to get your humanity back before you settle down or settle for someone else who also isn't fully human or has been dehumanized? Look, I don't need to tell you guys this, my regular listeners. I hope you know this. But you can spend one night with a person and treat them with kindness and have great sex that leaves them feeling affirmed and seen and pleasured and more fully human, even if you did put them in a gimp suit. You can also marry a virgin as a virgin and only have sex in the context of that exclusive lifelong covenant relationship and abuse your spouse psychologically and physically every day for the duration of your lifelong covenant relationship and take a person apart or be taken apart piece by piece over decades and hollow a human being out and leave a shell of a human being behind. Like I said, Tim Keller, unlike the other assholes in today's opening, Tim Keller seems like a good guy. One of the good ones, one of the nults. But I worry about the people who follow him, who believe this shit, this purity culture bullshit, whether it's coming from one of the good ones like Tim Keller or it's coming from one of the bad ones, it's bad. It's harmful. It's toxic. I know people who've been indoctrinated into purity culture find their way to my podcast because once every couple of months I get a letter from someone who says that they were raised in the evangelical alternate universe and they got online when they started to get out and they were looking for some actual information about sex and relationships and found their way to the Lovecast and it helped them. Helped them to love and accept themselves and helped them to see sex, in a relationship or not, as something that could be and should be joyful. As something that it's actually pretty easy for humans, with a little effort and a little thought, to get right and do right. Instead of as something sinful that it's almost impossible for humans not to get wrong. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as much show, more guests, more questions, no ads. Sociology professor Kelsey Burke joins us to talk about evangelical Christians and the concept of sex addiction and how this has had disastrous consequences for us, most recently in Atlanta. All that coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get up to $200 off all mattress orders at helixsleep.com/savage. Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. Calling about a pandemic success story by an old lady. I'm in my 60s. I'm a church lady. I'm a grandmother. I've been married to the same man for 30 years. I've used pot maybe once a year since my 20s because I never liked inhaling, and I have a professional license that I'm really invested in protecting. The last 10 years, well, it's sex has been shifting. Each of us has been having some real hormonal changes, and making love stopped being so much about fireworks on the 4th of July and more like holding each other through a really beautiful sunrise. And that's been fine. Sex changes every decade. That's okay. Well, then the pandemic hit, and in a fit of stockpiling, I went out and bought some gummies and then put them away and kind of forgot about them. And months into the pandemic, I pulled him out, and I ate one, and we were making love, and he was going down on me. And I've always been multiply orgasmic. 3 was always my baseline. Well, I was high enough that I couldn't count, but he assures me I hit at least 10 from oral sex. It was a personal record after 30 years of marriage to one man in my 60s. One of the good things about being in hormonal fluctuation is you never know what to expect. And sweetheart, when you listen to this, it has never been boring with you.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your success story. We also want to thank you for all of your calls, all of your response calls going back through the years. You have been a regular caller, a regular listener. Going back to the very start of the podcast, some of your response calls have played on past shows. And we remember with particular fondness your excellent advice to a woman, to another caller, about how to wash her vagina that we played on an episode of the Savage Lovecast at least a dozen years ago. And I just wanted to let you know on my behalf, Nancy's behalf, and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth's behalf, that we really appreciate you. All right, if you want me to open next week's show with your sex success story before we get to everybody's problems, give us a call, 206-302-2064. Share your success story, and we might open next week's show with it.
Hey, Dan. I am a cis woman in my mid-30s. I've only ever been with cis men, but I'm attracted to pretty much everybody, so I identify as bi. My husband and I have been together for 11 years and married for 4.5, and he is 100% the love of my fucking life. We both grew up super conservatively, but have had our liberal awakenings over the past decade or so. And part of my evolution has been consuming lots of media about love, sex, and relationships, including being a Magnum subscriber. Whoop, whoop. And in that process, I have come to believe that I am a hoe in my heart and that a monogamous relationship is not for me. I brought this up with my husband for the first time 3 years ago after I read The Ethical Slut, and we've talked about it regularly since then, but we're not on the same page yet. At first, he was shocked that I would want to open things up, and I certainly can't blame him for that since monogamy has always been the structure of our relationship. We've had some really tough conversations about it, some that turned into fights, and some that made us feel even more Twitter-pated. And if nothing else, we are now completely sure of our love for and commitment to each other. Recently, my husband's libido has taken a nosedive for several health-related reasons. I am pretty much always horny, and while I love to masturbate, I miss sex with a person, so I think that now would be a great time to start exploring non-monogamy. Intellectually, my husband agrees with me, but he's still having some emotional reactions to the idea. He says it doesn't feel equitable for me to run around having fun while he's at home doing nothing. Full disclosure, he's the breadwinner in our relationship by a long shot, although I do make my own money and would never ask him to pay for me to go on dates or anything like that. He also handles most of the quote-unquote adulty things in our household because I have severe ADHD that comes with executive dysfunction and makes me shitty at a lot of chores and tasks, so I fully understand where he's coming from. What can we do, or what can I do, to give back to him and make this feel more fair for him?
8 years into a marriage is a little late to realize that you're an ethical slut, that you are polyamorous, or that a monogamous commitment is not for you, and you're facing the challenge that so many other people have faced, where you've made a monogamous commitment at a time in your life where that was what you thought you wanted, or that was legitimately what you did want at that stage in your life. And now you've realized that maybe it was never right for you. Maybe you had been raised to believe that good people are monogamous and monogamous people are good and you wanted to be a good person. So, of course, you wanted monogamy. Or maybe you've just outgrown it and it's not right for you anymore. So what do you do now? Well, you have to sort of retcon your relationship. You have to renegotiate the terms of your relationship. And the person you're renegotiating those terms with, you need their consent to redefine your relationship. And if that person doesn't consent, well, then there will be conflict. There will be dragons. What happens then? Well, maybe you get left, or maybe you leave, or maybe that person agrees under duress to accommodate your desire to fuck around with other people, and it becomes an engine of conflict in your relationship. Not just the wanting to fuck around with other people, but the actual fucking around with other people. And on the other side of that, after you cross that Rubicon, after you start fucking around with other people because it's what you want, because you've issued that ultimatum to your partner and they have reluctantly consented to you fucking around with other people to stay in the relationship, but it's a price of admission that they may not be happy to pay, but they're willing to pay. When you get to the other side of that, when you get to the reality of you out there fucking other people, they may find it unbearable and decide to end the relationship then. Or they may find that it's a whole lot less scary, you fucking other people, than they thought it would be, or less upsetting than they thought it would be. And what was a reluctant agreement, what seemed like an enormous price of admission to pay, becomes not a cheerful agreement, but an agreement that doesn't come with so much tension and conflict. Just they now agree to what they reluctantly agreed to in the past. Or they bolt, or they leave. And there are risks for you and your partner leaving that you're going to have to factor in to whether you're going to issue that ultimatum or not. Your partner makes most of the money in the relationship. Your partner does most of the chores and most of the dealing with bills and the grind of everyday life. And walking away from all of that with your severe ADHD, that's going to leave you in a pretty shitty position, even if you can have all the dick in the world that you want, until you can find somebody else to partner with who can take care of washing the dishes, making the food, cleaning the house, making most of the money again. And that person, those kinds of people, they don't come along every day. So there are risks for you here. The conversation you have to have with your husband, if you're going to be allowed to do this, and it sounds like maybe he's already progressed a little bit because his libido is in the tank because of his health issues, and he knows that you're frustrated. He knows that you're horny. 3 years ago, he found out that you would rather be in a non-monogamous relationship than a monogamous one, but you agreed to stay monogamous for him to honor the terms of the commitment that you made 11 years ago. And now, instead of saying, I don't want you to do that, he's saying, basically, what's in it for me? Where's the equity? You get to fuck other people, and that's what you want to do, and I'm going to be home alone, left alone, while you're off fucking other people. So what's in it for him? If he has no libido, if he has no interest in being sexual, you can't offer to allow him to do what you're doing, to run off and have the sex he doesn't want to have with other people he doesn't want to have it with. That sounds transactional, but maybe you offer, or you step the fuck up and start taking care of more of the adulting, as they say, in your shared lives. If you can get online and make arrangements and go out there and do the work, do the labor of finding other people to have sex with, you can do the fucking dishes, you can do the fucking yard work, you can do some of the taking care of the grind and paperwork of everyday life. Maybe you can take some of those burdens off his hands, particularly now when he's struggling with a health issue that's tanking his libido, but apparently not tanking his earning ability or his ability to do all the chores, you said? Really? All the chores? Maybe in exchange for the permission slip that you want, for the accommodation that you want, for your libido and your desire to get with other people, you could step up after 11 years and do more for him, with him, to run your shared household and your shared lives. And if the effort you were putting in, if it wasn't too much of a challenge for you mentally, if the effort you were putting in around taking care of shit around the house got you a permission slip to go off on the occasional Friday night and fuck somebody else, maybe it would be worth the sustained effort And you would find focusing on that kind of grindy everyday life shit a little easier. But if you don't want to exit this relationship, you're going to have to get your husband's consent. A lot of people consent to opening up a relationship. They become, I call them PUDs, poly, or open under duress. And after their poly is under duress for a while, after they're open under duress for a while, they acclimate to it, or they get used to it, or they realize that their fears were unfounded. And perhaps the happier, more satisfied, less resentful partner they have now that their partner can fuck other people is a better person for them too, a better person that for them to be with, someone they enjoy spending time with again, even being more sexual with in the wake of opening up the relationship again. That's sometimes a surprising development for people when they reluctantly open the relationship, is that they find that there are benefits for them erotically, emotionally, sexually on the other side of that line. But the only way sometimes to find out what's on the other side of that line is to walk the fuck across it. And sometimes you got to be dragged across it. The risk for you in attempting to drag the person who makes most of the money and does most of the housework or all of the housework is being fucked out of that money and fucked out of that housework and having to pull your own weight and take care of yourself as a single person in the future. And you really have to wrestle with whether that's a risk you're willing to take to have the kind of freedom sexually that you would like to have. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OMGYes.com, a website devoted to women's sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMGYes has interviewed and surveyed thousands of women about what's made their pleasure better, physical techniques, the psychological techniques, and ways of guiding their partners so that they can experience pleasure or more pleasure during sex. The findings are peer-reviewed and published. This is science. They are doing data. They're not just winging it. And all of this research and data and science is brought to life in fun, honest videos featuring regular women sharing stories from their own experiences about what works for them and what might work for you. I've watched a bunch of these videos. They're really great. I think they're really valuable. I think they're a tremendous resource, and I think you should check them out. One of the things their research has found is how easy it is for us to blunt or cut off our own explorations when we think things like, I've already got techniques that work for me, I'm good. But finding out what works for other people can help you find new things, bonus things, additional things that work for you. Indiana University School of Medicine researchers actually did a study giving OMG Yes to 1,000 women and their partners. 96% realized there's actually more room in their lives for sexual pleasure, more room for growth. OMG Yes is not a subscription. Each batch of content is a one-time payment, like buying a book, that you keep and own forever. And your contribution goes on to fund future pleasure research at IU and the Kinsey Institute. Learn more about the study at omgyes.com. And our listeners get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. Do yourself a favor. Do us a favor. Support the Lovecast by going to omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a married woman in my mid-30s, and like so many other women of my age, I'm just now starting to really understand my sexuality, thanks to people like you and Esther Perel. It's been a really empowering and exciting time of my life, and thankfully I'm married to an awesome man who's a feminist and GGG and has gone on this journey with me. A couple years ago, I began sort of circling around the idea that I'm bi. I owe a lot to you and to Robin Ox and her philosophy that being bi is having the potential to be attracted to both men and women, not necessarily to the same degree or at the same time. And I now feel pretty confident in saying that's me. So how widely do I need to announce this? I've always considered myself an ally, and I believe in the importance of speaking your truth. And if me saying out loud that I'm bi could help someone else, I want to do that. But at the same time, my marriage is monogamous, so me announcing that I'm bi would be just that, an announcement. And I don't want to feel like I'm attention-seeking or taking space from people who truly need to share their voice. Do I have a responsibility to be vocal about this? How would I even explain it, since it doesn't really change my life in any practical way? Or is this just something that I now know about myself and share privately with people I love?
You aren't taking space from anyone by claiming to be bisexual. Bisexuality isn't an unrenewable resource. There's no scarcity. We're not going to run out of bisexuality. You can come out as bi and you haven't taken anything from anyone else. And potentially you will have helped someone like you, someone who may have entered into an opposite sex marriage and thought of themselves as straight and identified as straight and gradually came to the realization that, no, they're bi. And just knowing they have friends and family who are bi in an opposite sex, long-term committed, sexually exclusive relationships may help someone else in your life or your orbit arrive at the self-conception that it took you so long to arrive at a little bit sooner. And so, yeah, you should totally come out as bi. You don't have to hire an airplane pulling a banner over your city announcing it. Coming out as gay, lesbian, bi, trans, asexual involves coming out to the people that you love, the people that you care about. At a certain point, that often tips into coming out to everybody generally and widely and broadly. You came out to my mom and my family as gay, came out to some friends as gay. Eventually, you know, I was in gay relationships. So I was perforce out as gay to people I went to school with and people I worked with. And it just kind of spread from there. But the first step and the most important step and the most consequential step and the thing that really changes people's attitudes about queer people is knowing queer people and knowing that someone in your life that you assumed was straight, maybe because they were in an opposite sex relationship, is not straight. And that assumption was faulty, not an irrational assumption. Most people in opposite sex relationships are indeed straight, but not all. And it's something that we should bear in mind. Sometimes meeting someone or knowing someone or being told by someone that we thought was straight or assumed to be straight or an opposite sex relationship actually isn't straight puts that in the back of our heads that maybe we shouldn't always make that assumption, or maybe we should be ready, willing, and able to revise those assumptions when we get to know people better. So yeah, come the fuck out as bi to your husband, to your siblings, to your family, to close friends, to your intimates. And who knows, maybe one of your close friends, a woman who's married to a man and has been married to a man for a long time, is also bi and has not yet realized it, hasn't been exposed to Robin Oaks the way you've been exposed to Robin Oaks. Or maybe some of them already are bi and are doing what you're doing, hanging back right now, wondering if bisexuality is something that they have a right to claim and a bisexual identity is something they have a right to assert. And it is something you have a right to claim. And you would benefit from being out. All the studies show that people who are bi and closeted, that creates stress in their lives and contributes to less than optimal mental health outcomes. So for yourself, you should come out as bi, but also for others. And just as you don't need to hire an airplane to pull a banner over your city, you don't have to make the conversations where you come out to friends and family feel so high stakes and so consequential. There are a lot of women in straight appearing relationships who are bi. And if someone assumes you're straight, you can just say, hey, actually, you know what? I'm bi. You can also, if you want to, have the tearful, hand-wringy conversation with your family and style it as one of those tearful coming outs. Or you can just drop it into a conversation as a fact about you. But you shouldn't fear dropping the conversation. You are a part of the conversation. You're a part of the queer community. Welcome. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Helix Sleep. Me and my husband, we spend a lot of time on our Helix mattress and not just sleeping. Like a lot. I wish I was there right now with my husband on our sexy, sexy mattress. Because Helix is the best mattress around. Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. Terry and I matched with the Lux Midnight mattress because we wanted something that felt not too soft but not too firm either, and we both tend to move around a lot at night. With Helix, we got the mattress that was right for us, right for the way we sleep, right for the kind of firmness we wanted, and you can get a mattress that you know will be perfect for you too and perfect for the way you sleep. They have several different mattress models to choose from, soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot, and even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-sized folks. Our mattress is a sturdy, comfy, and very happy place for us. So if you are looking for a mattress, take the quiz, order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again. Just go to helixsleep.com/savage, take that 2-minute sleep quiz, and get matched to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but they're not going to need to pick it up for you because you are going to love it. Helix Sleep is right now offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you by going to helixsleep.com/savage.
Hello, Dan. I am a 33-year-old cis gay male. I'm a conversion therapy survivor. I am still somewhat sex averse. It's still causing me issues with guilt and general lack of sexual interest overall. I'm in a polyamorous relationship so that my husband can have a more exciting sex life than I can provide. Anyway, recently, I want to say about a year ago, I found myself when I was driving trucks to suddenly be interested in the guys at the cruising sites and stuff that I'd encounter. I used to drive long haul, and these guys would have fun in the woods in their car and stuff like that. And I realized, like, the act of watching this was a huge turn on. And I slowly explored and I found out that I kind of have a very strong exhibitionist streak and a very strong voyeuristic streak that I did not know were there, but they tend to really pump up my sexual interest. So, like, on a normal day, you know, having sex with my husband may have me at a 2, whereas this has me up to a 9 or a 10. So this runs me into a problem. I guess this is my real question here is I don't want to step on issues of, I guess, consent. I've been interested in watching pornography about, like, voyeurism, exhibitionism, that kind of thing, but I also don't want to run into trouble with the consent involved. Like, is someone consenting to be watched? Is they jack off? I'm just worried about that. So I guess I want to know, are there resources for someone like me? This is their real sexual drive. And where can I go to find these resources? Like, how do I know that the porn is filmed consensually? How do I know that I'm not actually accidentally violating someone's privacy? Or how do I know that someone wants to engage in exhibitionist behavior with me? I don't know. Like, how do I even get into this world, and how do I do it ethically? You know, my husband is definitely not into these kind of things. Neither is our boyfriend. They're both anxious about that kind of stuff. But, like, how do I involve them in this? And how do I get them to kind of be more interested in sharing this with me? Because I feel like this could be a good way to finally have an active sexual life with them.
There are so many places gay men can go alone or together where they can observe other people, other gay men having sex, or they can be observed having sex with their partner, where you can be a voyeur, where you can be an exhibitionist, where you can be both in the course of a single evening. You can ping pong back and forth between watching and showing off. Considering the almost limitless opportunities once the world opens back up, once we're on the other side of this pandemic, once everyone's vaccinated, considering the almost limitless possibilities that you have as a gay man to roll into a cruisy area where the people having sex in public are knowingly consented to being observed, they're having public sex. Sometimes, arguably, people in these cruisy areas violate the more hypothetical rights of people not to see that. Most cruisy areas are very, very secluded. You have to be extremely lost or extremely looking for them to find them. Most gay men who have public sex in public cruising areas worry about being victimized, worry about violence, and so go to some lengths, sometimes great lengths, to make sure the only other people who stumble into this cruising area are other people who are cruising. But you can go to bathhouses, you can do all sorts of things. So you don't need to rely necessarily on problematic pornography. You have plenty of opportunities as an exhibitionist and a voyeur to get your show off, get your look at, groove on without violating anybody else's consent. There's a lot of voyeur porn out there. Some of it is ethically produced. Usually, you know, voyeur porn is ethically produced when it's just so clunky and obvious that this is consensual. And that fact that somebody isn't being violated, that somebody isn't being watched without their knowledge, ruins voyeur porn for some voyeurs, for many voyeurs. But that is, if you're worried about the ethics, the only kind of voyeur porn that you can consume ethically. Hopefully one day we'll have a steady stream of voyeur and exhibitionistic porn made by sex robots. There's animation out there. There are lots of dirty stories written, lots of erotica, written erotica about voyeurism and other sexual pleasures, sexual interests that really can't be indulged very ethically or ethically at all without the consent of all participants. And so maybe read about it instead of watching it. Maybe you could cultivate a taste for written erotica to scratch this particular itch. And to other voyeurs out there who aren't gay, there are so many people who are putting it out there, who are asking to be looked at, that sneaking up to somebody's house and peering through a window, using a long-range telescope to spy on someone who isn't asking to be looked at, just seems like an asshole move. We live in what is now ought to be a paradise for voyeurs. We live in such an exhibitionistic culture that you can get your voyeur itch scratched just by following the right people on Instagram who are showing off all the fucking time, who want to be looked at. There are so many people out there who want to be looked at that you can look at up closer from afar without them knowing you're looking, because they're pushing it out there to the whole world. And it seems to me that with a little effort and focus and blowing a few loads in the right direction, you should be able to satisfy the voyeur thing there if you're interested in satisfying the voyeur thing ethically, as we should all be interested. We should all be interested in satisfying our sexual urges and desires in an ethical way without harming anyone else. As for your partners, you say you have a husband, you say your husband or you have a boyfriend, you share a boyfriend. How do you get them interested? Well, you have conversations about public sex. You have an honest conversation about how this is something you really enjoy. You might want to leave out that sex with the husband is a 2 and observing a couple of people in a cruisy spot having sex is a 10 for you. But if watching turns you on and they're having sex, you can watch. If they're comfortable having public sex in one of those cruisy spots that's pretty private by dint of being a very hard to get to spot, maybe they would do that with or for you, or maybe they're comfortable having sex in a bathhouse and being observed by you. Or if they're not comfortable having sex in a bathhouse or a sex club or at a big kink party, maybe they're comfortable with you having sex in those venues and they would be willing to tag along and be in your audience, watch you while you exhibit yourself. There's lots of in-betweens. And for gay men, there's not just the cruisy public spaces where there's the risk of being in public, the risk of getting caught, the risk of traumatizing somebody who does the hard work of stumbling into that gay cruisy area, or the risk of violence. There are lots of venues, bathhouses, sex clubs, kink parties, where gay men can get together, a big open space that has lots of other men coming and going, lots of other men around, but only people who want to see that are in there. Have you ever conducted the dreary exercise of adding up all the time you've spent in line at the post office? Don't do it. It is depressing. That's why I recommend mailing and shipping online at stamps.com. Stamps.com has saved businesses thousands of hours and tons of money. And with stamps.com, you get the services of the post office and UPS all in one place. And that place is in your home. Whether you're a small office sending out invoices, an online seller shipping out orders, or a giant warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. Once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or drop it off. It's that simple. With Stamps.com, you get discounts of up to 40% off post office rates and up to 62% off UPS shipping rates. Not to mention, Stamps.com is a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Stamps.com, they will save you time and money. It's no wonder nearly 1 million small businesses already use Stamps.com. Stop wasting time going to the post office and go to Stamps.com instead. There's no risk. And with my promo code SAVAGE, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in SAVAGE. That's stamps.com, promo code SAVAGE. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again.
Hi, Don, Nancy, and the tech savvy at-risk youth, 23-year-old bi male living in Ireland. I broke up with my girlfriend of 4 years in December of 2020. It was a pretty good relationship in a lot of ways, and it was my first real love. Basically, when we met, she was the definition of toxically monogamous, jealous over nothing but a compliment to a female friend. She didn't talk about her feelings, and she kept a lot of stuff bottled up when something bothered her. I had a good upbringing and have no problems being vulnerable and opening up to people, so I tried to encourage her to do the same. 2 years into our relationship, during a pretty big argument we had specifically about her not communicating about why she was depressed and being particularly distant, in floods of tears and upset, she told me about her brother sexually abusing her when she was younger, and that she'd also had a number of instances where she had been sexually assaulted. Obviously, I did try and be supportive. I encouraged her to seek counselling and therapy, and didn't push the topic with her because it's something she 100% has the right to take at her own pace. We talked a little about it maybe once or twice a year for the last 2 years of our relationship, and I did continue encouraging her to seek counselling, which only happened for one session in the last year of our relationship, and only happened after another painful teeth pulling. She definitely struggled with depression, and she did tell me that she was making progress with her therapist nowadays through therapy. I invested a lot of myself in trying to help her and be kind and caring. She never really learned how to open up about her feelings while we were together, and it became very frustrating for both of us as we butted heads about it. This had knock-on effects into many aspects of our relationship in the last year. Fast forward to the beginning of March, about 3 months after we broke up, we had sort of kept in contact, and in the chatting we did, she told me about how she'd been seeing a therapist for a couple of months and told me about her personal development, all of which genuinely made me happy to hear. The stuff she hadn't been doing while we were together that ultimately led me to want to end the relationship. I called her one of the nights to talk and asked if we could try again. She said no, and she was seeing someone else. She also said she didn't love me anymore, and that totally broke my heart. I feel really disappointed that I invested so much of myself in someone, and that after we broke up is when she finally took my advice about many things. Not just about the mental health, but also about her sexuality and her identity as an individual. Did I mess up by investing so much of myself in someone else? I wasn't perfect, and I definitely could have been a better version of myself, but I feel like after all that, seeing my advice taken and her trying to be the best version of herself now really sucks, because I spent 3 out of 4 years really trying to help her grow and be happier. Now we're done because it didn't happen while we were together. I don't want to get back together. I had a good moment of clarity after our talk, and it wouldn't have worked even if she said yes, and I'm glad she did say no. But what can I do better for the next time? Do I not invest in other people as much, or do I make more of an effort to encourage someone to look after themselves?
I don't want to bag on you, because at the end of the call, you see through your own shit. But at the beginning of the call, it sort of sounds like you're arguing that this person, who was a mess when you were together, was obligated to stay a mess after the relationship ended, so that you wouldn't feel cheated out of the years you had invested in her and encouraging her to seek the help that she clearly needed without result. And then seeing results after the relationship ended made you feel like those years were wasted? I don't think so. And you don't think so either. You, in a very real sense, left this person in better condition than you found them. You honored, even the age gap here, it's not always about age gaps, you honored the campsite rule to the fullest extent while you were together. For 4 years, you encouraged her to seek the help that she needed to seek. Help she only began to really sincerely seek after the relationship ended. That often happens. Sometimes we don't get off our asses and go get the help that we need until everything is taken from us, until we lose the job, lose the relationship, lose whatever, lose the support of our friends and family. Sometimes we have to hit the cliche rock bottom before we do something about getting the help that we need. And that may have been the case here. It may have been the end of this relationship. It may have been losing you and the support that you offered her that inspired her to go get support elsewhere, support she clearly needed, support that may have helped her see that although you were the right person for her to be with the last 4 years, you're not the right person for her to be with in the future. And you get that, and you understand that. We are all of us a mass of contradictions. There is some petty side of yourself that feels cheated, cheated out of the time you invested in her, but also cheated out of the relationship you could have had, not with her forever if you weren't destined to be together forever, but with her for a few years where she was healthier and more functional because she'd gotten the help that you had encouraged her to get. Maybe for some of those years, you were the help that she was getting, and getting help from you made her feel like, consciously or subconsciously, most likely subconsciously, she didn't need to go get it elsewhere, didn't need to go get it from the professional she clearly needed to go get it from. Well, now she's doing that. And you're happy for her. By the end of the call, you're happy for her. By the end of the call, you agree. By the end of your question, you agree that you shouldn't be together and you're not pining for her anymore, although you were before. So what are the lessons for you going forward? Well, maybe you spent too much time beating your head against the wall. If losing you was what ultimately prompted her to go get help, maybe if she lost you after a year and 3 months, after that good year and then the three shitty months, or after 2 years, maybe you'd be a little less resentful if you hadn't continued to fight and fight and fight to save her. Maybe you'd be less resentful now. Maybe this is the lesson. Maybe this is the takeaway for you. You'd be feeling less like not she cheated you, but you cheated you out of the time you continued to invest in her after it was clear that she wasn't going to go get the kind of help she needed to be in good enough working order to be in a relationship with you or anyone else in the first place. And so it's not that you go out from here and you only date people who are in perfect working order, because nobody out there is in perfect working order. Maybe the takeaway for you here is that after a point, you stop investing in a relationship if it's not functional, if that person that you're with isn't healthy or functional. If that person needs professional help and refuses to get it, despite your encouragement, maybe you end it. End it then. End it after the first two or three or four times you encourage them to get the help that they need, or after encouraging them for what? You can arbitrarily set a time limit, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever you're comfortable with, whatever investment you're comfortable making in a future partner. But she's not obligated to stay in a bad place because she didn't get to a good place while you guys were together. She didn't cheat you out of anything. And you know that. Again, I'm not trying to drag you here. You get that. You get to that by the end of your call. And I think you knew that all along. But next time, if you find yourself in a similar situation with a similar person, with somebody who needs help and is refusing to get it, maybe you get out a little sooner. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read your tweets. Matthew Grant tweets, I used to think Nick Kroll was a huge but funny jerk because he plays them so well. His appearance on the Savage Lovecast showed me that he's smart and funny and empathetic and sweet and full of great advice. I completely agree with you, Matthew. Actors who play jerks or comedians who make fun of jerks by pretending to be jerks shouldn't be assumed to be jerks themselves. Same standard applies to people who play nice guys on TV or on the internet. A. Chambers tweets, this Easter, I'm going to say allegedly instead of amen after the prayer at my girlfriend's all-Mormon family dinner. Hashtag Sky Daddy, hashtag Savage Lovecast. I didn't see a follow-up tweet from you, A. Chambers. I hope you lived to tell the tale. And finally, Dr. Irina Pismeni tweets, oh my God, at Fake Dan Savage mentioned the book Love Drugs, The Chemical Future of Relationships by Brian Earp and Julian Savulescu on Savage Lovecast, episode 753. Yes. Well, Dr. Irina, if you like that brief mention, you're going to love the full-blown interview I did with Brian Earp about Love Drugs on episode 699 of the Savage Lovecast. All of our past episodes with all of our greatest guests are available to Magnum subscribers. Go and subscribe at savagelovecast.com. And now your response calls.
This is a response to the caller from the last episode that's had several unsuccessful first dates lately. My advice is twofold. Do not call them dates, and do not meet in a place with romantic expectation. After matching on an app, the next step is an opportunity to meet in person. It should be a relaxed environment where you two can interact with each other and be yourselves. Go bowling. Do not go to a nice dinner. Go surfing or go dancing, or whatever activity you two have in common. But do not go on a picnic with wine and chocolates. Is a coffee date much of a date? No, it's just a means to meet in real life and see if you have an in-person connection. If you do, then you can move on to quote-unquote dating, which in my mind comes later. There's matching, then meeting, then dating, These are three separate steps.
Hello again. I just finished listening to your latest episode where you had a caller comment on choosing to be gay and saying, well, so you chose to be straight. And it occurs to me that I have to ask, why do we even defend choosing to be gay? Even if someone did choose to be gay, I don't think there should be anything wrong with that. I realize that people don't choose to be gay, but so what if they did?
Hi, Dan. This is a comment about the sex success story on episode 753. Just a reminder to all the callers that you can achieve that mind-blowing orgasm and open-hearted communication afterwards without any substances. If you are curious, you can try Tantra. It's pretty awesome.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. It's time for another round of Hump's Greatest Hits, our third volume of some of our favorite kinky short films in the last 16 years of the Hump Film Festival. It starts on April 30th. A great new selection of kinky, funny, sexy, anything goes, porn shorts, many of them hilarious. Go to humpfilmfest.com to watch the trailer, read about the films, and grab your tickets. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Kelsey Burke on Twitter at Kelsey Burke. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. And Nancy, we will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Please go get vaccinated.